Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. This time of year is always a little bit nerve-wracking for hoof care providers that work on horses that are metabolic or have had laminitic issues. In the Northern Hemisphere, we are coming into spring, and the little grass shoots are popping up bright green, and the horses are trying their best to nibble as much of them as they can as they grow. These can be packed with sugar, and we can see horses that suddenly, seemingly out of nowhere, become footsore, become slower in turnout, or become laminitic. To help owners and other hoof care providers that may be struggling with laminitic cases, I want to spend a few episodes this spring interviewing and chatting with other hoof care providers that have worked with some severe founder and laminitic cases and what they did to rehab these horses and get them back to soundness. In this episode, I'm talking with Amber Greason, a hoof care provider based out of Texas, about a really difficult laminitic case that went from on the verge of a euthanasia appointment to sound and happy. So why don't you start and tell us a little bit about yourself and your hoof care business and the area you work in and things like that.
Okay, great. My name is Amber Greason. I am Back to Bear Hoof Care LLC. I specialize in helping horses carefully transition out of metal shoes using either glue-on composites or boots. And I also am a Dr. Kellen NRC trained equine nutritionist. And I also clicker trained because I like to cover all of my bases.
That's awesome. Do you do training like as a profession or on the side?
I started it when I bought a 2-year-old during COVID because that seemed like a good idea. And I'm not really super well versed in traditional pressure release training, even though my background is hunter jumper land. I just knew where my skills lied and I didn't trust myself to, because you can really create a monster, both types of training. And now I'll teach people basics, like clicker training for veterinary care is really helpful. Needle shy horses can be clicker trained away from needle phobia. And honestly, that's where most people, if they ask me about clicker training help, it's for veterinary care.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I am so interested in it. So my Mustang is very sensitive to pressure. And so I did a lot of positive reinforcement training with him. But veterinary care is one of his downfalls. He is definitely very difficult with it. So maybe I'll chat with you about that after this.
That's so cool. For sure. Was also super needle phobic after getting a nose full of porcupine quills. Unsurprising, he became needle phobic after that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, clicker train this away. So anyway, yeah, that's a whole nother topic.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. So, I mean, I know that we were just chatting about this, but it has become super green here in Massachusetts just in the last week. I swear, like, the fields went from yellow to green. All the grass is sprouting up. I was just walking outside on the tracks today and noticed that there's lots of little edging of grass that's like poking in at the edge of the fence line. And the horses have like slowed down eating hay to try to like find these little tiny bits of grass. And it's made me much more aware of the fact that I have clients that have horses that are metabolic that likely may start struggling with some hoof issues if owners aren't attentive or careful. So I wanted to chat a bit about that today, especially as you've had cases where you've had laminitic horses that have had really good rehab success. So yeah, I think that would be a really great focus for us and for listeners to kind of hear how to deal with those situations.
Yeah, for sure. I'm in Central Texas where normally it's pretty drought conditions. And recently we've had a lot of rain and the grass is really like, hello, I'm here again. Like, oh no, go away. And the pony that we're going to discuss today, we ended up building him his own track. And we were trying to figure out how do we really get rid of the grass? So we dragged where we made the track and then we burned it. So we really were trying to make sure it didn't come back. But even after burning and dragging and really trying to get rid of it, it's still trying to peek back up because there's sections of the track that we have deer everywhere too. And there's sections that he's afraid of, which that's where the grass is coming. And then he'll get brave and go find it. Like, no, you can't have that.
Yeah. It's so funny. Our first year when we were trying to get rid of grass, we also burned it and it came back greener because I guess that burning it adds like nitrates into the soil. And I was like, oh, that was the opposite of my goal.
Good to know. We will probably not try burning it again.
We ended up buying a rototiller, and that actually really helped. We just rototilled the tracks, and it churned up the dirt enough that it killed it ripped up the grass roots. Of course, then if you have any rain, it gets really muddy. So then either you have to scrape up what you rototilled, or you have to, ideally scrape it up and then surface it just to make it so that it doesn't end up just like sludgy and gross.
Okay, I'm going to write that down right now.
I would love to talk about one of your, laminated cases that you had good success on, and sort of like the protocol, or the, not even protocol, just sort of the strategies that you use to get the horse more sound, so that it just kind of puts a bug in some of the owner's ears that might be struggling with this, of things and resources that they can go to help. And I know that you had a specific case in mind, if you want to sort of mention a little bit about that horse's history and when you first got involved.
Yeah. So this pony, it's a long story. I've actually known the pony since 2019 when I first met the owners, and they also are the owners of the private farm I manage. And the mom who owns all this place, she just goes above and beyond for her animals. I mean, in every corner, she's above and beyond. So when she bought the facility, we moved her horses there, and I got involved pretty early. At the time, I was not doing any hoof care. I was just focusing on my own horse. And then in September of 2022, he's now 17. So I think in 2022, was younger, but
yeah.
Yes. And he had, he at that age, we're like, okay, he's a pony. We should probably test for PPID. And he was like borderline, and his insulin was already high at that point. And at the time, we added insulin wise and started half a tab of Prasend. And then we were like, okay, vet says it's good. Let's go. And he was still in work at the time. He was still actively showing, and we didn't really notice anything. And then jump forward, now we're in October 2023. His ACTH, I think, was still baseline. It was like 55 or something. And the TRH-SIM was 309. And at that time, I was starting to learn things. And the half tab of Prasend, I was like, I don't think that's enough. But nothing changed, nothing happened. And then November 2023, he had a horrible colitis episode and a week-long hospital stay. And I think that the colitis episode probably was the straw that broke the camel's back, because when he came home from that, we got kind of lazy with his turnout, and I got the times backwards. And you know how now we know that early morning hours is the quote unquote safe time to graze? Well, we were turning him out from 4 o'clock at night until 12 o'clock the next day, which turns out like literally the worst possible times. And in April of 2024, we started seeing the very first more subtle signs. And I think learning what the subtle signs of laminitis look like can probably help a lot of horses get treatment early and not go through what we went through with this pony. And the subtle signs are, he had stripes on his feet. So like he had a black stripe and it started to curve. And I was like, that's not supposed to do that. And obviously we know about horizontal stress rings. So yes, he had repeat horizontal stress rings. And then he was sound on straightaways and just subtly off, just a little bit gimpy turning. And then the other one that less people seem to know about is that subtle toe flick right before they land heel first. They will land heel first, but the toe will sort of flick up at the last second. Mm-hmm. And my best assumption is that they're doing that to unload the tip of P3 right before they land. And once you see what that looks like, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
And it's like, those little tiny subtle things, and now knowing what I know now, I really probably should have like rung the alarm bells earlier. But we did have the vet out because we couldn't resolve the lameness on our own. And it was initially diagnosed as a suspensory body strain, which it wasn't. It was slowly starting to founder. And we had radiographs taken. And that's the other thing that make sure that you can maybe learn how to look for rotation, because we were told, oh, the rotation's not rotation, it's a club foot. So treatment was delayed for 2-3 months. And then we sent out the rads to a board certified radiologist who then confirmed, no, this is rotation. But by then, he was full-blown foundering, like the laminitic stance with the roached back and standing under himself, and he was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and when you were mentioning the toe flick, it's so funny because, I mean, as I'm sure that you know, I like always harp on, I want to see horses fully extend and land heel first. And it is that little bit of a nuance where like some heel first landings are pathological where they're trying to avoid their toe. And it's that like if you can see it very easily with your naked eye, then you might want to check that there's nothing else going on. And it should be a more subtle heel first landing for a lot of cases. I mean, it's obviously different for every horse. There's horses that are hypermobile, and that's a whole nother conversation. They tend to be like very exaggerated in their movement. But that is something where if I have a horse that's overweight or if I have a horse that's metabolic and I start to see them do that little extra flick, I'm like, I want to make sure that nothing's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be a combo thing because there are some horses that definitely have nothing going on and they'll do that, like you mentioned, with hypermobility. But in my chubby horses, if I start seeing that, I'm like, can we get some testing done, please?
Yeah, exactly. And you also mentioned the metabolic blood work. But then the colitis episode, I will say that my most difficult laminitic case I have ever worked on was the result of a colitis episode. Mm-hmm. And that is, I mean, it would technically be a SIRS laminitis case. It wouldn't even be metabolic, where it's a systemic inflammatory response syndrome. And those, it's like a cascade of just like toxins just breaking down the lamina. And that can be so difficult to bring them back. And luckily, I mean, fingers crossed, knock on wood, the horse that had colitis issues is doing fine and great now. And the owner and the vet were so fantastic. But man, those are such difficult cases.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's one of those things where, I did document all of it. I have his ACTH baseline and insulin from September 2022, October 2023, November 2023, and then April 2024. So starting in April of 2024 is when we really, because that's when this all kicked off. And we tried everything. We tried, like I said, we tried insulin-wise. That changed absolutely nothing. We tried metformin. That also did nothing. We tried thyroid-L. That did nothing. And the poor pony, we really did throw the book at him before we ended up with doing an SGLT2 inhibitor. And that is honestly probably what saved his life, in addition to making sure that his percent dose was correct. Because his testing numbers really never really indicated that he was totally out of control, but he is now on 2% a day. And even that, I sort of think, is that really enough? Even though he's a large pony, but he still is a little bit symptomatic, though his testing has been under control for several years now.
Yeah, and I know that Dr. Kellen will say that sometimes, I mean, obviously we're not veterinarians, this is not medical advice, but, sometimes you're dosing to the symptoms and not necessarily the blood work, because it seems to me, at least, that different horses have different thresholds for what bothers them in terms of elevated blood work. I don't know. I mean, I just see what I see with horses that I work on, and some of them can have like an insulin of like in the hundreds and they are like barely uncomfortable. And then some of them have an insulin of like, 40 and they're crippled and it's crazy. You don't really understand why some horses are so much more sensitive. So obviously I mentioned insulin and I know that PPID is ACTH. I was just giving that example.
There's too many acronyms.
So when we had chatted before, you had mentioned, was there a point where the veterinarian or the owner were thinking about euthanasia?
Yes. So by the time we got to August of 2024, his insulin was still completely out of control on metformin, on thyroid-L, on 1%, and nothing was working. And he was so painful. We did all the traditional stuff. He was on like max dose of bute and it did nothing. And there was one morning I got up to feed and he clearly had been down all night and I dragged him to his feet and the section he'd made in the sand. So our stalls have attached sand runs. So he was stalled with his run and he clearly had been down all night. And when I got him up finally, and it took me and another guy to get him up, we were like, this is bad. So we called the vet out. We got new rads. He was worse. So at the peak, he was 28 degrees rotated on the right front, 14 degrees rotated on the left front, and 11 degrees on both hinds. So he was rotated everywhere, with his right front being pretty significant. And then at that point, I think we did have cloud boots for his fronts. And since we now had rotation on the hinds, we bought cloud boots for his hinds. And the cloud boots made an enormous difference. I mean, huge difference for his comfort. So that was the next first step after we were, what are we going to do here? So, okay, well, let's get him comfort on the feet first and see what we can do. And at the time, the vet we were working with, I mean, she was just amazing. She was like, okay, we've tried these. These are the things I know. Why don't we try Invokana? Let's do it. So we were like, okay, well, it's either we let him go or we try Invokana. So that was literally the discussion that we had. And I was obviously at the time, this was the first case I had like this. So I didn't really know that much about it. And I ended up contacting Dr. Kellen, and she kind of walked me through what to do. She's got a PDF on they need to be on L-glycine and L-carnitine. So we were like, okay, we read that. And then we read about, we need to test triglycerides and liver enzymes. And we were like, okay, I think we're ready. Let's do this. And within 2 days of starting a whole 300 milligram Invokana, the pony was a whole new man. It was incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have some horses, or I have some clients' horses that are on SGLT2 inhibitors. We typically end up seeing owners use Steglatro, which is just another drug in the same class. And it's amazing how quickly they can really start to feel better. And I mean, it is, you do have those things that you have to monitor, like the triglycerides, like you were saying, to make sure that they don't end up with liver issues or hyperlipidemia. But if you have a horse that's at death's door and you're sort of like, this is a last ditch effort, we need to figure out what to do. It is, I mean, it's been a godsend for like a handful of horses that I see that are on it. I mean, it's really incredible how comfortable they can become. And really what it's doing is they're just, they're basically peeing out excess glucose, which is why it can be taxing. But yeah, it's pretty amazing. And so in that sense, like obviously you got the comfort started with the cloud boots and the SGLT2 inhibitor. But did your trim change throughout the recovery? Did you have any other management changes or things that popped up that ended up you had to work through in that time?
Yes. So when all this started, I was not doing his feet. But I took him over after we brought in another vet who was like, yeah, this thing's foundered. So I that's when I took over his feet, because then at that point was like, okay, we need to do the weekly small trims. As when he was really painful, he could only hold the foot up for about maybe 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. So it was 10 seconds of quick, okay, down. And then give him a break. 10 seconds, rasp, okay, then down. And I did a combo. So I did a realignment trim, keeping heels under control, but I really left his toes alone. I didn't back the toes up too much. I mean, his white line was so incredibly stretched. It was always full of blood pockets, because he was definitely abscessing as well, which I'm sure added to his immense pain level. But yeah, my trim style, I really kept it extremely basic. I did as little as possible, mostly just lowered heels, a little tiny bit, as much as I could. And in my notes, I think the very first time that he finally could stand comfortably where I could really get something done was October 2025. Wow. And that was, I mean, it took a long time.
And he probably had grown out almost a whole new hoof capsule by then. Because you said it was fall 2024, or am I wrong?
So spring 2024 was the very early signs that were missed.
Okay,
and
yeah.
Then by fall, like early fall 2024, is when we were like, oh dear, we made mistakes. But I've got a radiograph from September 11, 2024. It's pretty alarming, but there is, you can see about a centimeter of new growth that is straight and where it should be. But you can really appreciate that rotation. Like, oh brother, that's not good.
Yeah. And then, so you just said that the fall of 2025, he's now comfortable for trimming?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. No problem at all.
That's awesome. And so what does his, life look like now? Like what management? I mean, obviously there's the medication that he's on, but what other management has the owner implemented? Have you changed anything now that he's more comfortable in terms of your hoof care approach?
So what we ended up doing, he was in cloud boots on all 4 feet for 7 months. And then we did, after the hinds sort of stopped being a problem, barefoot behind. And then I did Easy Care Octos, super glue shoes, on his front feet for 3 months, just waiting for that wedge to grow out a little bit. Cause I was like, I don't want to chop this off. It doesn't seem like it's hurting anything. I've got pictures of that too. And then by summer of 2025, everything was looking pretty normal. There was still, like, if you knew what you were looking at, you could see like something happened to this foot. But by summer of 2025, he was back to barefoot, and he's rock crunching now. Like, we have caliche road everywhere, which caliche can be hard on even a normal footed horse, and he marches right past it.
Is that a kind of rock?
It is. Yeah. Caliche, it's a white rock. It's very popular for roads down in Texas, and it's not smooth. It's pretty sharp.
Oh, wow. I don't know if we do have it here, and I'm just like unaware of the names of rock. But yeah, that's amazing. I mean, so is he back in work? What does he do for like his day-to-day life?
He goes out. This is a, you know, I was a show pony, and he never really got in love with the outside life, even with a turnout buddy and a friend. And he obviously, they all like it, being outside better when they've got a friend. But he will not pee outside. So he has to come in because he will only pee in shavings. And he will wait until someone can let him in so he can go in his shavings, because he will not go outside. So his day-to-day now, he looks fantastic. He's like probably our slimmest horse on property, but he hasn't lost any condition at all. So it seems like even though he's not really in any work, he does work himself out, zooming around on his track. It's pretty fun to watch. And he knows me because I give him his Invokana every day at noon. And it's like, he knows if I'm coming over to the track, I'm coming to bring him his Invokana and a handful of Teff pellets or Timothy pellets or whatever hay pellet I have. And he will, whatever he's doing, he stops and will zoom full speed at me. And it's pretty amazing that he is completely back to normal. It's remarkable from how bad he was.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so what I was going to ask you a little bit about what his like maintenance diet is. Obviously, I'm sure that he avoids grass if he lives on a track. So that's awesome.
Yeah. So he gets Vermont Blend Pro and Unbeatable Beet Pulp Pellets. So plain beet pulp pellets, and then 0.2 pounds of Teff pellets. And then a literal handful of Triple Crown Senior Gold. And I went with Senior Gold because I think the ESC is relatively low. The NSC is low, but I think the ESC is pretty low. And then he's also on 8 grams of L-carnitine, 5 grams of Jagulin, 100 grams of L-glycine. And I actually fairly recently switched the herd to organic chia instead of flax. And I think he's on 60 grams of chia. And then 2000 IUs of vitamin E, since he doesn't get any grass. And his 2 tabs of Cascend, and that's it. And then for hay, we feed. It's very difficult to get Timothy in Texas, but we go up to, there's a place called Hay USA. And it's an 8-hour round trip for us. But we go and get tested. Second cut and first cut Timothy, and he gets a blend of that and hay nets and hay balls, and he always has hay available.
That's amazing. I love that. Yeah, I mean, that's how we are here. We try to have hay, or we do. We don't try. We have hay out for the horses 24/7. It's tested. We do typically feed mostly Timothy and orchard grass. But you had mentioned in his supplements that you feed the L-carnitine, which I believe that Dr. Kellen has mentioned that to feed with SGLT2 inhibitors to help with the potential like liver enzymes, or
yes.
Am I making this up? Can you go?
No,
up?
Yeah. got a PDF from her about why the L-carnitine and L-glycine, for some reason, the two of them, I need to really find that PDF and read to you what she actually says. But I actually have the blood work proof that both L-carnitine and L-glycine, when added while feeding an SGLT2 inhibitor, does help reduce triglycerides, because before we added those two things, his triglycerides were like through off the roof. I mean, just off the charts, crazy high. And when we added those two things in, his triglycerides are still high, but they're at least on the chart high, not off the chart high.
Yeah.
So they're definitely helping to control that.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that was something that I hadn't even heard until maybe the fall I was reading that. And I haven't, I mean, obviously the veterinarians on the cases that I work on would know better than I would, but I haven't heard feedback on any of the cases that I see that the triglycerides are too high where they're worried about taking the horses off the medication. But it was something that I kind of like filed in the back of my mind when I was like skimming through the ECIR forum that was mentioned by Dr. Kellen as some, sort of like a, you know, remedy, not remedy, but it's sort of like a preventative to help with those issues, because, you know, for some of these horses, it's a life-saving medication and you don't want it to risk causing another issue, you know?
Yeah. I feel like we've just been really lucky, and we do regularly test. We do pretty much at this point, now that he's been stable for a good while now, every 3-ish months, we do new ACTH. This spring, we need to do a new ACTH and TRH sim, and then we get baseline insulin, glucose, thyroid. And then for him, we'll add liver enzymes and triglycerides just to make sure we're not crazy anywhere. But I mean, if you looked at him and you didn't know, you probably wouldn't know that this pony survived something pretty insane.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. And obviously every case is different and there's going to be nuances with their diets and their movement and their trim and the, you know, booting or whatever you do for hoof support. And, you know, it can't be a prescription for every single case, but I can't recommend ECIR enough. Like, it is just the most amazing group with an emergency protocol that tends to help basically every horse that I see just to get them stable enough to start to heal. So in terms of their hooves.
Yeah, we did very closely follow ECIR protocols, soaking hay, testing the hay. I mean, we went pretty insane when we were really desperate to try to figure out what was really going on. And it did help. And sticking to ECIR protocols, honestly, even on non-metabolic horses, probably could help them stay non-metabolic.
Right. Yeah. And that's the other thing that I always tell owners is that when they have good blood work results, for like when they're on this sort of protocol, it doesn't mean that their horse is fixed or healed. It means that they are doing the right management in that moment to keep their horse at a good spot, and it needs to continue. Because a lot of them are like, oh, look, these blood work numbers are great. They don't need the percent. They don't need, like, you know, what we're doing, because they're all better. And it is a long-term maintenance thing that these horses need to stay sound and comfortable and thrive.
Right. And we're constantly aware of the risk of a relapse. I mean, when it's vaccine time, we're like, oh, are these vaccines safe? Let me check. Let's double check. And that's definitely something that's on our minds, because I know you're aware that they can definitely relapse. You make a mistake somewhere, or you know, that's where we've discussed retesting and making sure that numbers are under control. And even now, his last test was October 2025. And insulin was still in the 30s. It was 32.6. And his TRH stem pre was 26.6 and post was 274. And that's on 2% a day. So I still am a little like, something like, we might have to reset him where you know, take them off percent for a second and then put them back on it. And that'll help kind of refresh it, because he's been on 2% a day for 7-8 months now. He doesn't scream like there's something still going on, but I look at him every day and I'm pretty hyper aware.
Yeah, I know. And that's something where, I mean, obviously owners should talk to their veterinarians, and what would be great, you know, hop on the ECIR forum and talk with Dr. Kellen. But it is like the nuances of, I feel like the dosing for PPID is so, it can be really confusing, because some horses need very little to be managed and some need a lot to be managed. And it can change throughout the year depending on the seasonal rise. And that's something where it really depends on the individual horse.
Yeah. And same with the SGLT2s, you know, it's like, well, can you decrease the dose? Can you take them off of it completely if you can keep them in work? And the only reason this pony is not in ridden work is he's kind of a terror to ride.
Oh.
Well, he had a history of lawn darting children, so.
Oh, goodness.
But if you took him in the ring, he was either winning or it was like a rodeo show. And now looking back, I'm like, well, was it a rodeo? Because he was already starting to be uncomfortable.
Right.
Who knows?
Right. Yeah. And honestly, like when it gets to that, I'm like, you know what? You don't have to, like, you're not going to be forced to be ridden if you like hate it this much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And what's really funny, I'm tall. I'm 5'8", 5'9", if I stand up straight. And I rode the pony summer of 2022. And it was like, I mean, he tried to take off with me and it'd be like, dude, what are you doing? I'm the nice one. I've got hay pellets in my pocket. Don't run away.
Yeah, right.
So, but at 17 now, he's sort of earned just being left alone because he did the show pony life. I mean, he horse showed a lot. So to me, I think he's earned mostly being left alone. As long as he stays fit, we might put him in a lunge program. And the wonderful woman who owns the property, we've discussed a water walker. We discussed making like a water chute kind of thing because everybody knows how good water is for exercise.
Yeah, I know. So I would love to do something like that. But if it was outside, I would worry about the bugs that like standing water attracts. Like I know some people that actually have like outdoor water features to exercise horses in, but maybe someday, maybe I'll figure that out. Maybe with like a little filtration system.
That's on my Christmas wish list.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Like, I love to not lunge these horses because the rest of the animals on property are all performance horses and like we gotta keep them in shape and I don't want to lunge them. Ugh.
Right.
So that's not my Christmas wish list. Something, some water or something. And yeah, bugs definitely would be a concern.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, this has been a really exciting, like, you know, it's nice to hear these cases where it was such a dire situation and then now they're doing so well. Do you have any sort of like takeaways or something that you wish that horse owners would recognize or do or something that like last minute advice for those who are listening?
Yeah, for sure. I think I've got a couple. The first one would be listen to your gut. If your gut says something's not right, then follow it because you're probably right. If you look at your horse every day and you notice something, just trust yourself and don't back down because that was something that I kind of wish early on that when it was still pretty subtle, I wonder, like, would it have gotten as bad as it did? And then educating yourself on subtle signs, learning what that looks like, watching how your horse moves, noticing, I mean, more than anything, it's just paying attention. And then the other thing is, because he was a show pony, he did get a lot of steroid injections. And I know that's been sort of a recent topic of steroid-induced laminitis. And now there's also was a new study that we now know that insulin will spike after steroid injections. And I have to wonder if after a certain number or a certain time, does insulin stay high because of repeat steroid injections? And because I'm in the performance horse world, that is definitely something that I discuss a lot with my clients and friends with performance horses. And then the other thing is maybe, you know, learn a little bit about diet. Where can you lower your starches and sugars? Where can you start to control stuff like that? If you have a paddock with grass, do you need a grazing muzzle? Like the flexible filly one is the one that we had for a while, except, you know, we did use that on the pony and he hated it and he got his pasture mate to help him get it off. So hence building a track.
Right. I know. They're so funny. I swear. It's like, if there's a will, there's a way. It's just like so hard.
Very creative. I commend them for their ingenuity without thumbs.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, yeah, they definitely keep us troubleshooting for sure. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much. I so appreciate your time today and being willing to chat through this. And if anybody wants to reach out to you in terms of like hoof care or even just a chat about more cases, is there a way to contact you? And what's your typical service area?
My service area is relatively small. I'm in Dripping Springs, which is just a little bit outside of Austin. I stay in about a 30-minute radius of that because that's where my farm is that I manage. And I don't really love to drive too far away from there. Just I'm kind of like a very controlling person. But I definitely do consultations and anyone can take a gander through my website and it's just backtobearhoofcare.com. And I have a contact form and I answer through that all the time. And if that doesn't work, my email is really easy. It's just amberatx@gmail.com. And I'm happy to talk to anyone through if they have a problem or if they need help or advice, especially on using SGLT2 inhibitors since that is fairly new still.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, that's great. And I'm sure that there'll be people that are curious. So I really appreciate your time and being willing to chat.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. This was so fun to talk about. It's really just rewarding to discuss a win.
I know. And it's so true because I feel like, you know, I've talked about it before on the podcast that it is such an isolating career in some ways that we are working really by ourselves most days. Like, obviously, we have friends that we talk to over social media that are healthcare providers, but it's so nice to be able to share these cases because you feel less alone with a case that you're struggling with, or you get more ideas of what to work on if you feel stuck. So I think it's so important to be able to talk through these and troubleshoot and hear what works and what might not.
Yeah, absolutely. And we tried everything. So I can definitely tell people what worked for us and what didn't.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Well, I appreciate your time. Have a nice rest of your day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person. And chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.